Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1951, with a release date of February 6, 2015, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. The K1N Navassa Island De-Expedition takes to the air. The ARRL makes public its legislative agenda for 2015. The Raspberry Pi Foundation announces its latest system on a chip. Hams involved in the Tour de France receive honors. And a popular ham radio-based radio program of the 1990s is coming back via an Internet archive. Find out the details on Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1951 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
The long-awaited Navassa Island De-Expedition is on the air.
73 is running 100 watts here. This is Kilo November, K1 Navassa listening.
The first contingent of the K1N team fired up on 40 and 80 meter CW sometime around 0100 UTC on Super Bowl Sunday, with stations stretching 10 to 20 kilohertz or more up the band from K1N's transmit frequency. By early Monday, February 2nd, hams were reporting via Facebook contacts on the other bands, including 20 and 17 meters SSB. By the time you hear this report, the entire team should be on the island with all stations in operation. Plans call for K1N to remain on the air for approximately 10 days. Also, a reminder that stations trying to work K1N should not transmit on the De-Expedition's frequency. Operations will always be operating split frequency. Late updates on K1N will be posted to the Amateur Radio Newsline page on Facebook. The ARRL has made public some of its legislative objectives for the coming 114th congressional year. The league says that it will continue to secure passage of legislation instructing the FCC to extend the requirement for reasonable accommodation of amateur radio station antennas to all forms of land use regulation. The league will also continue to oppose legislation leading to the reallocations of amateur spectrum or to sharing arrangements that reduce the utility of existing allocations. Any legislation that diminishes the rights of federal licensees in favor of unlicensed emitters or that encourages the deployment of spectrum polluting technologies will also be opposed by the league. Among other objectives, the ARRL will seek recognition of the unique resources, capabilities, and expertise of the amateur radio service in any legislation addressing communications issues related to emergencies, disasters, or homeland security. The league says it will support complementary legislative objectives of other radio communication services, particularly the public safety and scientific services that require spectrum access and protection from interference for non-commercial purposes that benefit the public. Support will also be given to legislation authorizing the FCC to appoint an electrical engineer or scientist as an additional staff member to ensure the commissioners have adequate access to technical expertise when making decisions. The ARRL continues to oppose distracted driving legislation that does not clearly define the class of devices including in the regulation so as to exclude two-way mobile radio transmitters or receivers used by amateur radio licensees. The Raspberry Pi Foundation has revealed the official second edition of its Raspberry Pi SoC, or System on a Chip computer. Now more from Heather Emby, KB3TZD.
This latest version, announced on February 2nd, promises speed increases of up to 6 times and compatibility with upcoming ARM builds of Windows 10. The Raspberry Pi 2 Model B consists of a quad-core ARM V7 Broadcom BCM2836 processor running at 900 MHz. It's supported by 1 GB of RAM, 4 USB 2.0 ports, a full-size HDMI out visual display port, micro USB power source, and micro SD port for storing data and loading an operating system. Eben Upton is the founder of the Raspberry Pi Foundation. He says that because the chip is built on the ARM V7 architecture rather than the ARM V6 as in previous models, it broadens the range of operating systems available for the machine. This includes Canonical's popular Ubuntu Linux operating system, which, said Upton, a lot of people had wanted since the first day. Upton also said that the new Raspberry Pi 2 should run Microsoft Windows 10, which of course means that it will only run the ARM-friendly RT build of Windows 10, the exact capabilities of which has yet to be announced. Since the Raspberry Pi system on a chip was introduced, it has become a mainstay around which many ham radio projects have been designed and built. The introduction of the Raspberry Pi 2 Model B will more than likely expand the aspect of the hobby in new directions that only a few years ago were impossible to imagine. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD in Berwick, Pennsylvania.
The cost for the new Raspberry Pi was announced at about $35 U.S. The full story appeared in the United Kingdom publication Computing. It can be read online at tinyurl.com/latest-raspberry-pi.
This just in from the U.K. The Radio Society of Great Britain has published the updated HF, VHF, UHF, and microwave band plans on its website. Included in the changes is clarification that VHF WSPR frequencies in the band plans are transmitted center frequencies and not dial settings. The new amateur satellite allocation at 144.0 to 144.025 MHz and the new United Kingdom 146 MHz and 2300 MHz bands are also detailed. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH. Back to you, Don.
FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler confirmed on Wednesday, February 3rd, that he intends to bring wired and wireless broadband services under utility-style rules based on Title II of the Communications Act of 1934. He said Title II would bring to an end the debate over how to ensure that the Internet remains open to everyone, a concept known as net neutrality. In an op-ed published Wednesday on Wired.com, Wheeler said the new rules will ban paid prioritization. That's the idea that an Internet company can pay a premium to ensure that its traffic gets to the consumer faster than everyone else's. Wheeler also said he would reinstate rules that had been part of the previous Open Internet Regulation, which went into effect in 2010, but was overhauled last year by a federal appeals court, leading to the current situation. The previous rules banned an Internet service provider from blocking traffic or slowing down access to content on the Internet to favor their own services. Title II of the Communications Act holds the potential to radically change how the Internet is governed by giving the FCC unprecedented authority over it. The provision originally gave the FCC the power to set rates and enforce the common carrier principle, or the idea that every customer is treated fairly on telephone service. FCC Chairman Wheeler hopes to apply that principle to Internet traffic, preventing broadband providers from favoring one bit of data over another. Net neutrality is important in all aspects of today's society, including amateur radio, since more and more emerging communications technologies are dependent on it, and in the years ahead, it will be even more so. The Washington Times-Herald reports that Daviess County, Indiana officials are in the process of securing a grant to provide an additional layer of communication in the event of a disaster. Stephen Kentford, NAWB, has the details.
The county commissioners have approved the action of the County Emergency Management Agency to get a $20,720 grant from the Indiana Office of Homeland Security to add amateur radio antennas to the roof of the county security center. The amateur radio gear will be used as a backup to the backup for the Daviess County. Jerry Harbstreit is the sheriff of Daviess County. He says that he is familiar with amateur radio operations. Also that he believes that the addition of amateur radio is important in case of a major disaster where all of the other systems would somehow break down. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinfort, NAWB in Wadsworth, Ohio.
The additional antenna system is just part of what's being procured from the state grant. The county will be receiving some other unspecified electronics equipment as well. The FCC has issued a notice of unlicensed operation to Martin K. Elliott of Inyokern, California, for operating an unlicensed radio transmitter. According to the regulatory agency, December 17th and 18th, 2014, it responded to a complaint of unlicensed operation on multiple high frequencies. These included those allocated to aeronautical stations. Agents from the Los Angeles District Office confirmed by radio direction finding that radio signals operating on frequencies of 6280 kHz and 11595 kHz were emanating from a residence located near Inyokern, California. A search of the property records of this location found that Martin K. Elliott is the current owner and resident. On December 31st, the FCC notified Elliott that he must immediately cease operation of the unlicensed transmitter. He was also advised that the notice does not preclude the FCC from pursuing additional sanctions based on the outcome of its investigation of this incident. The unlicensed station, which calls itself YHWH, was not cited for operating on amateur radio frequencies, although ARRL official observers had monitored the station in the past on 7185 kHz using lower sideband. Also, one shortwave listener said the operation of YHWH changed frequencies regularly. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W6JW repeater, serving Santa Clarita, California. The FCC has issued a citation and order to the RGS Group, Inc., doing business as International Electronic Superstore in Boca Raton, Florida. This for allegedly offering for sale devices that jam or block Wi-Fi, cellular, GPS, and other wireless signals. Here's Newsline's Jim Davis, W2JKD.
On July 9th, 2014, in response to a complaint, an agent from the Enforcement Bureau's Miami office observed that International Electronics Superstore was offering for sale Wi-Fi signal jamming and cellular signal jamming devices at its location in the Sawgrass Mills Mall. The FCC says that these items were exhibited in a display case and that a salesperson explained to the agent that the cell phone signal jamming device, which was on sale for $299, could jam all cell phone signals within a close proximity. Also, that a combined cell phone and Wi-Fi signal jamming device, which was on sale for $599, can jam both cell phone and local area wireless internet signals with a close proximity. Later on July 10, 2014, an agent from the Miami office observed that International Electronics Superstore was offering for sale a combined Wi-Fi and cell phone signal jamming device at its location in the Dolphin Mall in Miami. Now, in its citation to International Electronics Superstore, the FCC notes that federal law prohibits the marketing and operation of signal jamming devices in the United States and its territories, and ordered the company to cease selling this gear. It has also ordered International Electronics Superstore to provide information within 30 days after the release date of the citation concerning the signal jamming device suppliers and sales, as well as the disposition of its signal jamming device inventory. The FCC added that a failure to respond or an inadequate, incomplete, or misleading response could subject International Electronics Superstore to additional sanctions. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD in Vero Beach, Florida.
I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in the newsroom with this breaking story. The FCC has imposed a penalty of $3,000 against Tommy Salter of Jacksonville, Florida, for refusing to allow an inspection of his Citizen Band radio station by commission agents. Back on August 22, 2014, the Enforcement Bureau's Tampa office issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture to Salter, proposing a $14,000 forfeiture for failure to allow the inspection. In his reply, Salter claimed that he had an upcoming doctor's appointment and could not comply at that time. He also supplied the FCC with tax documentation showing that the proposed $14,000 fine would prove to be a financial hardship. In imposing the reduced amount, the FCC said that Salter had not indicated to its agent making the inspection that he had to head off to the doctor. As such, the proposed fine was warranted. However, the documentation supplied proved that a reduction was called for and reduced the fine to $3,000. Salter was given the customary 30 days to pay the amount in full or to contact the FCC to arrange a time payment schedule. I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in the Satellite Newsroom in Topeka, Kansas. Don?
The British Broadcasting Corporation reports that a voluntary Raynet team that helped the 2014 Tour de France race through the Yorkshire Dales in the United Kingdom has received radio equipment worth about $8,500. The Radio Amateurs Emergency Network provided communications over 2,000 square miles in North Yorkshire. Radios were operated by 42 volunteers. The money for the award was donated by North Yorkshire County Council. The full story is on the web at tinyurl.com/raynet-reward. Radio Shack Corporation has announced that it has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in a deal to shut down the almost century-old retail chain, one that would also sell about half its store leases to telecommunications giant Sprint and close the rest. In a press release dated Thursday, February 5th, the company announced that it had signed an asset purchase agreement with General Wireless, Inc. to acquire between 1,500 and 2,400 of Radio Shack's U.S. company-owned stores. To make this happen, this transaction and an orderly sale of the company's remaining assets, Radio Shack and certain of its U.S. subsidiaries have filed voluntary petitions for relief under Chapter 11 of the U.S. Bankruptcy Code in the U.S. Bankruptcy Court for the District of Delaware. The sale agreement is subject to court approval and other conditions. Radio Shack's foreign subsidiaries and its franchisee-owned stores are not included in the filing. As part of this action, Radio Shack has filed a motion with the court to proceed with the closure of the remaining company-owned stores under an agreement with Hilco Merchant Resources. A list of the stores slated for closure will be posted in the near future on the restructuring information section of the company's website at RadioShackCorporation.com. Stores that are closing are expected to sell remaining inventory. Discussions are underway with interested parties to sell all of the company's remaining assets. The QRZ.com website is looking for a skilled, experienced, full-time web programmer. QRZ.com is an internet-based virtual company, so it doesn't matter where you live as long as you have good, high-speed internet connection and can interact with other team members who are on the Mountain Standard Time schedule. QRZ's technical infrastructure is cloud-based using industry-standard LAMP practices. Applicants need experience in both back-end server programming as well as HTML5, JavaScript, AJAX, and a knowledge of modern browser quirks and conventions. Applicants should send their resumes along with an introductory email to jobs@qrz.com. Some names in the news. CQ Communications has announced the appointment of David Chamberlain, W7DSC, as the magazine's new director of advertising and marketing. Chamberlain has nearly 25 years of sales experience, specializing in complex consultative sales and marketing. He has a successful track record in Fortune 500 business-to-business enterprise sales with MCI, SAP, and CheckFree, in addition to launching and running his own boutique international travel company, which specializes in philanthropic safaris. A resident of Reno, Nevada, W7DSC became a ham radio operator last summer and enjoys operating the latest digital voice modes. He can be reached via email at dave@cqcomm.com. The ARRL Board of Directors has bestowed the 2014 George Hart Distinguished Service Award on David B. Coulter, WA1ZCN of New London, New Hampshire. Coulter was recognized for nearly four decades of service to the amateur radio community, including such leadership positions as Section Emergency Coordinator and Assistant Section Emergency Coordinator. Among his other accomplishments, Coulter designed training and development courses for the New Hampshire Aries community and was the prime mover behind the New Hampshire Aries Academy. He also served as editor of the ARRL Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Course series and as a New England Division representative on the League's Emergency Communications Advisory Committee. The board also honored three professional journalists with the ARRL Bill Leonard Award for their outstanding coverage of amateur radio and video, print, and oral media. The video award went to Christine Kim of KSNV-TV in Las Vegas for her local heroes profile of the Nevada Amateur Radio Emergency Service. The print award went to Marty Attun of American Profile magazine for her radioactive article that profiled amateur radio. The Oral Media Award went to Steve Kraske and Beth Lipoff of KCUR-FM in Kansas City for their Exploring Ham Radio in a Digital World interview of Brian Short, KC0BS, Carolyn Wells, N0CJ, and Matt May, KC4WCG. The board announced the award recipients at its 2015 annual meeting, January 16th and 17th in Windsor, Connecticut. Turning to the ham radio social scene, the 2015 RTTY dinner at the Dayton Hamvention will be held Thursday evening, May 14th at the Crown Plaza Hotel in downtown Dayton, Ohio. Ralph Fedor, K0IR, will be the keynote speaker. Tickets can only be purchased before May 1st through PayPal at rttycontestdinner.com. There will be no tickets sold at the door. The North American Shortwave Association's 28th annual Winter SWL Fest will be held February 27th and 28th at the Doubletree Guest Suites in Plymouth Meeting near Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Winter SWL Fest is a conference for all radio hobbyists. It's sponsored by the North American Shortwave Association, but covers more than just shortwave. The gathering also attracts medium wave, scanning, satellite TV, and amateur radio enthusiasts. For example, this year's ARRL Southern New Jersey Section Manager, Skip Airy, N2EI, will be giving a presentation titled Regenerative Receivers Past and Present. Gary Donnelly will speak on ultralight medium wave DXing, and Michael Poole will present a session on crisis communications that will focus on radio as it sounds locally during such situations. Other topics include radio and today's teenagers, recognizing digital signals, and coast-to-coast geographically enhanced medium wave reception, to mention only a few. For more details or to pre-register to attend this gathering, simply take your web browser to swlfest.com. This is Ham Radio News for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Bandconditions.com is a new experimental website designed to provide 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week, 365-day-a-year real-time band condition information to SSB, contesters, and other operators interested in increasing their scores. It can also be a benefit to other radio amateurs to determine band conditions for nets and casual QSOs. This information is not based on any software predictions or any kind of satellite-based readings. Instead, it uses a new ionospheric sounding method called HF ionospheric interferometry, which operates very similar to the Pulsar system used by NASA. It's in cyberspace at www.bandconditions.com. South Korean wireless carrier LG Uplus has launched a unique mobile application which can be used as a portable radio transceiver, enabling communications between up to 500 users at the same time around the globe. The carrier announced on January 25th that the Uplus LTE radio transceiver app is downloaded. Users can exchange voice messages with one another by simply pushing a button on the app. The company said that people can use the app radio in areas where LTE networking or Wi-Fi is installed. LG Uplus says that there are no additional charges for the app itself. However, it notes that using it for 30 minutes every day will result in approximately 430 megabytes of data use per month. The first of the Planetary Society's two light-sail spacecraft will ride to space aboard an Atlas V rocket in May 2015. The mission is a shakedown cruise designed to test out the CubeSat's critical systems. The LightSail 1 entry on the IARU Satellite Frequency Coordination Panel status page lists a 9K6 GMSK AX25 amateur radio payload on 437.325 MHz. In 2016, the second LightSail spacecraft will piggyback into orbit aboard the first operational flight of SpaceX's new Falcon Heavy rocket for a full-fledged solar sailing demonstration. A short video about the project features television host and Planetary Society CEO Bill Nye, the Science Guy, along with Justin Foley, KI6EPH, and Alex Diaz, KJ6KSF, describing the spacecraft and its mission. It can be viewed at tinyurl.com/light-sail-demonstration. On the air, keep an ear out for PQ-70FEB, which is the second Brazilian special event station to celebrate 70 years since the end of World War II. Plans call for operation through February 28th on 40 through 10 meters SSB only, QSL via PS-7AB. To help celebrate the 90th anniversary of the International Amateur Radio Union, Danish radio amateurs will be active with a special event called OZ90IARU until December 31st. All bands and all modes may be used, but cross-mode, cross-band contacts, and contacts via repeater and echolink are not allowed. A special award has been created for the event. Further details are at OZ90IARU.DK. In the X, members of the Province Amateur Radio Club will activate Robinson Crusoe Island as 3G0ZC between February 20th and March 8th. A team of 20 operators plan to be active with 8 stations on the air on 160 through 6 using SSB, CW, and the digital modes. QSL information to follow. BD1IIJ will be active February 21st and 22nd from the town of Sujiato, China, during the ARRL International DXCW contest as a single operator all bands high power entry. If you make contact, QSL via Logbook of the World. PA1LP will be operational from Suriname March 5th through May 6th as PZ5LP. Activity will be on 80 through 10 meters using SSB and a number of digital modes, QSL electronically only via EQSL. DJ4KW and DK9GG should be on the air from Belize until March 5th as V31YN and V31GW. They'll operate on 160 through 10 meters, QSL via their home call signs. JS6RRR will be active stroke KH2 from Guam between March 19th and the 23rd. Operations will be on 160 through 6 meters using CW, SSB, FM, RTTY, and PSK31. QSL JS6RRR via the Bureau. And lastly, the Intrepid DX group led by N6PSE and K3LP has announced that it's received its landing and camping permit for South Sandwich and South Georgia Islands for its planned January 2016 DX expeditions. South Sandwich is currently the number 4 most wanted entity, while South Georgia is currently number 9 on the list. Plans are for the operators to spend 10 days on each island and plan for 8 full days of radio. More information to follow. And finally this week, a trip back in time. Take a listen.
CQ, 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 Arizona, and welcome to another great Ham Radio and More show. This is Len Winkler, KB7LPW, and today's guest will be
That's the
Jim
voice
Stevens.
Of Len Winkler, KB7LPW, now KH7LW, who was the creator and host of the first weekly radio show devoted to amateur radio to be broadcast on the commercial radio band. The original Ham Radio and More radio show premiered April 1991. At its height of popularity, it was syndicated on the Talk America radio network and was heard on more than 70 national radio stations, along with live and taped shortwave airings on WWCR and streamed live on the Internet. The show took a steady stream of calls from as far away as Europe and had spirited debate regarding matters of importance to hams of the time. The final live show, number 339, aired October 26, 1997. Now, KH7LW has announced that he's in the process of creating an online archive of Ham Radio and More programs. Several are already posted, and he plans to digitize and upload as many as he can. So if you want to hear what was on the minds of hams in the 1990s, take your web browser to www.hamradioandmore.com/shows.htm. Sit back, turn up, and enjoy. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South Africa Radio League, the Southgate News, TWIT TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You'll find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, for producer Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights are reserved.